Welcome to The Range Brief with Blackwing Shooting Center. We're your hosts, Mark Gore and Jared Ramey. Today, we are talking about suppressors. Mark, give us an overview.
Sure. So we're going to talk about why you want to buy a suppressor. What are the benefits of owning one, and why have they become so popular over the last 5 to 10 years? Then we're going to go into what you can expect out of owning a suppressor as far as the quietness of your gun. And then we'll get into how to buy one, what the process is, what the weight is, how much money you got to bribe the government with to buy one. And then we're going to talk about the different types of suppressors. So handgun suppressors versus rifle suppressors versus the all too common universal suppressor and what the applications are, how to figure out what's best for you.
Cool. I think we are well qualified to answer these questions.
Absolutely.
I have just over 10 years of experience in the military where I got to shoot quite a few suppressed guns. My experience is less on the recreational side and more on the duty side of suppressors. So I have a different perspective, I would say. And then Mark, what is your experience?
Sure. Yeah. So my experience is more from the product knowledge side of things. Sold suppressors and been an expert here around the shop for quite some time and know a lot about all the different mounting systems and what all products are out there and what fits best for what firearm system you're trying to put it on and the application that you have. So I do own quite a few myself, but unlike G.I. Joe over here, I have not beat them up quite like some of our men overseas have.
So a fun fact about Mark, if you've purchased a suppressor from us in the past, there's about a 90% chance that your salesman was like, I don't know that answer. Let me grab Mark and pulled you out to figure out what muzzle device fits your system. So yeah, he's definitely experienced. All right. So what are we starting with? Right. So silencer, suppressor, whisper cylinder, lots of names all describing the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Great question. So the original patent for suppressor is actually under the name silencer. So that's actually the technically correct name for it. Then people in the industry, once they started to become more popular, that was back in like 1900 or something, I think. Then when they got more popular, a lot of people wanted to use the word suppressor because it's more technically correct. Silencer doesn't really silence a gunshot. You're always going to hear something. It just suppresses or reduces the amount of noise. In most places you're going to be, people use them pretty interchangeably.
Interchangeably.
Whatever. There we go. Yeah, that's the word I was looking for. And but some people get a little, particular and want to hear one or the other. But if anyone ever sasses you for calling it a silencer, you can tell them that is not what Mr. Maxim, the inventor of them, originally patented as. So, that's a little bit of background. We won't dig too deep into the history of it, mostly because it's kind of boring. But over the last, I'd say probably, especially the last 5 years, they've gotten a lot more popular. Every year, there's more people buying silencers and buying NFA items, even though they've been legal for quite some time. There's been some, just kind of a quick overview on other NFA items. There's been some restrictions on machine guns that were put into place in the late 1900s that restricted kind of the new production of machine guns. And a lot of people kind of got the assumption that all of these NFA items, which is silencers, short-barreled rifles, short-barreled shotguns, and machine guns, that all of these were illegal. But a lot of good marketing by silencer companies and by the American Suppressor Association has really just let the world know that these are out there. And then on top of that, there's been some great laws passed that have allowed hunters to use suppressors while they're hunting to help preserve their hearing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we really undervalue the experience change. I know in the tactical side, the first time you use a suppressor, it was like, wow, man, I can talk to the dudes around me. I have so much more situational awareness, just a game changer in communication. And then on the recreational side, I mean, for hunting, absolutely a huge benefit. You know, it might give you an extra shot, but it definitely allows you not to have to wear hearing protection in the woods.
And most people don't. They want to be able to hear the deer move or the animal move. And they're just, one shot, it's not going to hurt my ears that bad. Well, it can. So it's great for people's hearing. And then on top of that too, just new shooters, shooting with a suppressor is so much more pleasant. Even on louder, hotter, higher pressure guns like 223s, it makes that gun tolerable. Whereas if you put a new shooter behind that gun in an indoor range, they're going to hate it. But you put the suppressor on it and it's a lot more manageable.
Absolutely. When my daughter starts shooting, it will be with a suppressed a suppressed 22, because it changes the experience completely. I want to get into decibels.
Yeah, absolutely. It's an interesting portion of it, and something a lot of people talk about when they're looking at suppressors is basically which one's quietest and how do you measure that? You measure that in decibels, which is a measure of the loudness of something. So yeah, I'll let you kind of take that away.
Absolutely. So an unsuppressed rifle shot, and this is according to the ASA, the American Suppressor Association, an unsuppressed rifle shot is typically 180 decibels. So if you think of, you know, a 223 or your standard rifle going off, pretty loud. And then taking it down from there, a 22 long rifle unsuppressed is typically 140 decibels. Now, I know it's kind of hard to get this an idea from the disparity of these numbers, but a conversation is typically at 60 decibels. So if you're listening to us right now, think 60 decibels. So if we go to a suppressor, a suppressed typical firearm, center fire, anything is going to take it from 160 to 180, depending on handgun or rifle, down to 130, 120.
Does not sound like much, Jared. That sounds like not that much.
Yeah, but it's all, I mean, think about going from 60 to 145 for 22 long rifle unsuppressed. If you have any experience with that, I feel like the numbers don't make a lot of sense. The graph is a bell curve. It's not linear.
So when talking about decibels, there's really two parts to the noise of a gunshot. So the first part is when the gas expands. So in a cartridge, when the powder is ignited, it pushes the bullet out the end of the barrel. And when the bullet exits, all of that gas that's forcing the bullet down the barrel expands into the atmosphere. So it goes from being constricted in the barrel to this wide open space. And that expansion creates a good portion of the noise you hear when a gun is shot. The other half, or the other portion of that noise, is when the bullet hits supersonic levels. So the speed of sound is, it depends on where you're at atmosphere, but is about 1150 feet per second. So when the bullet hits that speed, it creates a crack that is heard. So those two pieces combined are what you hear. So the first part is what the silencer tries to tackle. So what it does is it tries to slow down the gas as it exits the barrel. Imagine a suppressor is this tube with a bunch of traffic cones inside. So kind of stacked in on top of each other. So the hole down the middle is where the bullet would travel. And the gas, as it exits the barrel, it goes into this tube, goes inside, and it hits the base of the traffic cone. And it hits that kind of wall, and it turns around, and then tries, and it goes back through the hole at the tip of the traffic cone, and then it goes into the next chamber. It does the same thing. A lot of that gas will go to the outsides of the cone and hit the base, turn around, and then go back through the middle again. And it'll do that through all, you know, how many ever baffles you have, 6, 10, 12 baffles, and slow down the gas as much as you possibly can on the way out. And that will reduce quite heavily the amount of gas expansion, rapid gas expansion, which reduces the sound. And then the second part, the
actual bullet cracking the sound barrier.
Yes.
That's the second part of the gunshot. And how you mitigate that is with subsonic ammunition. Basically, you just either heavier bullets or lighter loaded cartridges, just keep that bullet from getting that fast. And then that will limit the second part of the gunshot, or that crack. Anybody who's, you know, been in a target pit knows all about the supersonic crack of a bullet target, or has been shot at.
Sounds like a scary thing, a target pit.
Oh, it's fun.
So subsonic ammo, is that something that is sold specifically, Mark, subsonic?
It typically is in rimfire, not necessarily in everything. Like in 9mm, for instance, they don't typically market 9mm subsonic, but if you have a 147 grain bullet in 9mm, it is subsonic.
Yep.
Because you can't put enough powder in the cartridge to make it supersonic.
Absolutely.
Regardless of barrel length. So,
and then sometimes you run into cartridges like 223, such a light bullet. You really, if you put enough or as little powder in it to make it that slow, the bullet's so unstable.
Bullet's unstable, and it doesn't have enough chutzpah to cycle the gun.
Yeah. Just a really weak. I was very excited. I found some subsonic 223. You like never find that stuff. It's just not really made. And super excited about it. Took it in the range, shot it, and it pulled my target in after I shot, and the holes in the target were of a bullet going through sideways.
Nice.
It was tumbling. It was so slow. It was keyholing the target, which was quite terrifying when you think about the bullet rolling. And that was at like, the target was at like 25 feet. So fortunately, I didn't roll in the suppressor, or else I wouldn't have that suppressor anymore. But yeah, that's when you get into the bigger rifle cartridges, then like 300 blackout made specifically to be suppressed.
Yep.
Those, they have a lot better luck because it's a heavier bullet. So it's more stable, I guess.
Yep. And there are rifle cartridges that are marketed to be super quiet and still have some really good ballistic performance.
Yeah.
Looking at 4570, 300 blackout, 8.6, which is new to the market. That's another one that's really geared towards that super quiet, but you can still shoot it predictably at distance.
Yep.
Some cool stuff for sure. But those are really the two things you're limiting. The suppressor is tackling the actual explosion of the cartridge, and the ammunition can tackle that supersonic crack. And if you have any questions about decibels, feel free to come into the shop and ask for Joe King. He's our OSHA guy. He would be happy to sit down with you and talk to you all about that.
Absolute expert. He gives us some wonderful annual training on the benefits of ear protection and the decibel ratings accordingly. And it's riveting stuff, really.
Trash.
You know, annual required training, of course. But he's got some great knowledge there. Next, I think we'll talk maybe a little bit about how to do this, what the process is. So we, Blackwing, have been in selling suppressors. It's been at least 10 years. The process has changed over time, and it used to be everything had to be mailed in paper. That doesn't really matter anymore. Everything's electronic, and it's quite a bit faster, but it's not fast. That is for sure. The nice thing is we have partnered with Silencer Shop, and essentially what they are for us is a paperwork service, and they handle all of the paperwork and the compliance process and the issues we might have, the collecting of the fingerprints. They've provided us with a kiosk to collect all of the information we need for any NFA item that you buy from us or that you buy through them, and just take that all off of your hands and off of our hands and make it as easy as it can be. So that, coupled with the ATF's new electronic system, has made things easier and faster, but your turnaround time still can vary greatly. Don't really want to quote a time now because it's always changing, but it's a much easier process than it used to be, and hopefully it'll continue to get simpler.
Yeah, absolutely. Timeline is tough. I kind of agree with you. It's hard to quote somebody because that can lead to disappointment. Like my first suppressor, it took 15 months to be approved. And the shortest I think I've ever seen is 3 months.
Yeah.
So I kind of queue up with you. So really, you buy it, and if you buy it at a place that has an indoor range like us, you can shoot it in that limbo period. So you typically you get to enjoy it, at least with us, you get to enjoy it until it's approved, as long as you're on the indoor range, which the experience would obviously be better if you were on an outdoor range by yourself. But still you can experience it until then. But let's say you want to buy a suppressor. You come into the store and you talk to somebody knowledgeable, and they kind of cater your options and, you know, kind of get you in the right category of suppressor and answer your questions. At least with a good dealer, they should be able to do that. So Mark, you buy a suppressor. This is the one you want. Yeah. First thing I'm going to have you do is pay for the suppressor. And then we are going to go over to the kiosk and start collecting all the stuff that we need to do to build your packet for the ATF, which includes fingerprints, a picture, a questionnaire, and that typically takes 5-10 minutes.
Yeah, maybe 10.
If you have, you know, really bad fingerprints, it might take a little bit longer, but typically anywhere between, you know, 10 minutes to 15. And then we're going to set you on a computer, take you to the silencer shop. You're going to buy your $200 tax stamp, which is what the ATF says we have to pay.
It's your government bribe for owning a fully legal item.
Yep. So you'll have the actual cost of whatever item you decide to go with. And then you'll also have that $200 tax stamp for them basically to process your paperwork and let you have it. from there, you have a couple options in trusts, and how trusts work is pretty in depth. You want to get into that?
Yeah, just real briefly, a trust just gives you a lot more flexibility. So it makes sense for most people. It costs, Silencer Shop has a single shot trust, they call it, just a one item trust that's $25 or $30, super cheap, and just gives you more flexibility. With a trust, you can add people down the road to be on the trust, and then anyone that's on the trust can take possession of that. So if you think about having a suppressor and going out and shooting with it, other people that are with you can shoot the suppressor, but you can't leave them alone with it. If you have them on the trust, though, if you're out shooting with your son, your spouse, partner, whatever, you could add them to the trust, and then they can have that suppressor and go out and shoot without you. Or if you got your suppressor at home and a safe they have access to, really, they should be on that trust. They should be able to have the ability to have possession of that suppressor if they have access to that safe. So it makes that easier, and it makes inheritance easier as well. Again, more flexibility, not super expensive. Makes it a tad bit more complicated, but really all the work's on Silencer Shop. They kind of handle that extra paperwork for you.
And that's the single shot trust. So that's a trust to each item. So let's say you bought 5 suppressors. Each one of those would have a separate trust.
Exactly.
And another benefit of that is, let's say you have, you know, you and your buddies all buy a certain brand of suppressor, and you all have muzzle devices that fit that. Well, if you put each other on the trust, you could swap cans and use them interchangeably. Another benefit of that is you can cater who has access to what suppressor.
Exactly.
So you could have, you know, your family on all of them, and then put your buddies on some of them if you wanted to, or your cousin or whatever. That opposed to a traditional trust. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So that's what it's less common these days. It's kind of the older school way. So I think that's, Jared, what you have, and that's what I have as well. It can be more convenient if you know, which is hard to know up front, but that you're going to have a lot of NFA items. Basically, you add all of your items to one trust. The benefit of that is it's all under one roof. The maybe not downside, but one limitation is everyone that's on that trust is going to have access, or, you know, is technically going to be allowed to have access to all of those items. So you can't cater it to the person, the item to the person. And then also, every time you buy a suppressor, everyone that's on the trust, when you buy it, have to have them go through that fingerprinting process and get all their information for the application. Whereas sometimes with the individual, the single shot trust, people will apply with just themselves off the bat. And then maybe down the road is when they're going to add people, which doesn't require additional fingerprinting and doesn't require getting your spouse's fingerprints up front or at any point.
Yep. And if that might sound confusing, I know it was confusing the first time I heard it. We would help you walk through everything at the store and get you on the same page.
Yeah. Just like we can help you pick out the right suppressor for you. And that really is best done in person. So we can talk about what guns you have, what guns you might own. That really changes what suppressor is best for you. And you know, what you think you might be getting into and how many suppressors you might be buying really changes our answer. And it's the same thing with the trust versus the individual versus the, you know, traditional versus single shot, is talking with you about who you have in your family and your friends that shoot and what's your comfort level for some of these options that we've talked about will change the answer for what we might recommend.
Yeah, definitely. So after that, we would submit your paperwork to Silencer Shop. After you've taken your picture, you've done your questionnaire and fingerprints, bought your tax stamp, then we'd set you up with an ATF eForms account. So that's kind of the next step in this, is creating your login to the ATF. And that's how you'll submit your paperwork, is through that login. So this is kind of one of the things we run into the store. People forget their username and PIN numbers. Those are really critical.
Yeah.
Really critical. And we are going to set you up with a sheet so you can write all that stuff down. But then you'll submit all that, say, hey, Mark, I'll see you in a week. And then in that week, Silencer Shop is going to process and build this packet. And so at the end of that week, I'll call you and say, hey, man, I need you to sign this. You'll log in with a rep from the store and type in your username and your PIN number, and boom, you're submitted. Now you're waiting.
Yeah. And the nice thing with Silencer Shop is in that time period where they're creating the paperwork, they also were reviewing it. They have a whole compliance department and they're really top of the line. They have, I think, the lowest confirmed error rate on paperwork. And what that means is if they make an error in the paperwork, the ATF has to mail the error to us, and then we have to tell Silencer Shop, and Silencer Shop has to work with you to get it fixed and then get it back in. And so there's typically a, you know, a 2 to 4 to 6 week delay when that happens for us to get things lined up. And having very low error rate means you're going to get your stuff back quicker.
Yeah, we definitely appreciate it on our side too.
Absolutely. That's kind of the processy portion of the things, which really isn't super important to memorize because we will be there the whole way with you and keeping tabs on you, as will Silencer Shop, to make sure that everything is done correctly. The nice thing is, once you've gone through everything Jared talked about, you've gone through the kiosk, gotten your fingerprints taken, all that information, the next time you come to buy a suppressor, once you have the one and you love it and you're like, man, I need more of these. I want all of my guns to be like this. When you come back, you buy your suppressor, you buy your tag stamp again, and then no more kiosk. You don't need to go through the fingerprints again. You don't need to answer all these questions again. They save all of your information on this secure offsite, you know, government security level database. And every time you go to buy another suppressor, they pull that information and then ship it off for the ATF again. So there's just that couple steps of getting on the phone and submitting with us that you have to do, and just makes it a lot simpler to buy more items moving forward.
Yep. The only thing you have to update is your picture. Everything else, like, you hope, theoretically, your fingerprints shouldn't change throughout your lifetime.
So hopefully not. Yeah.
All right, Mark, what are we talking about next?
Next, we'll get into the more interesting part, which is how to find the right suppressor for you. And here we're going to talk more high level about what your options are as far as the higher level. Do you want a rimfire suppressor, rifle suppressor, pistol suppressor, or a universal suppressor? And as I mentioned before, it's going to, what the exact model you want is going to kind of depend on your needs and your guns and what you might be buying. But here we'll kind of hit the higher level stuff here. So the universal suppressor is, I guess, where we'll start. That works for everything or a lot of things.
Yep.
Those have become more and more common, more and more popular. Nice thing with that is you buy it, it works for a lot of different calibers, and you only have one tax stamp. The downside is the jack of all trades is a master of none. So it's not the best at suppression for all of those. You're also going to have a decent amount of money and accessories to make that work on multiple different guns. So, you know, just because it works for everything doesn't mean it works. It comes with all the parts to do so. You have to buy the different adapters and pieces to get that to move across the different calibers and the different thread pitches that you have. Still a great option for a lot of people, but just something that you want to keep in mind. If you have 9mm handguns and .223 rifles, you don't need a 45, 46 caliber universal suppressor. If you don't plan on buying other larger calibers, you're better off with a smaller suppressor. It's just going to work better for you. And on the handgun, it's going to be lighter. Yeah, and suppression is going to be better.
Yep, definitely. And when I think about suppressors, there's a couple categories that I think are important. And you kind of have to make a scale of what's most important to you. For me personally, sound reduction is important. But if you have a really quiet can, you also have a heavier can, a longer can, and a can with more back pressure. Me personally, I like very little back pressure, so I would sacrifice some of those other things to get the most of that. And each brand has their own, you know, their own attachment method, and some of those are easier than others. So there's some variability here and picking what's most important to you. Most people, when they go looking for a suppressor, is like, I want it to be as quiet as possible.
Yeah, that's the way to go.
Ugh.
These army guys, they're more practical than that, which is, actually, I always jab Jared on this. I was listening to a webinar or something from, I think it was a training video from Surefire, and they were talking about one of their product development guys, and he was talking about the development of their suppressors, and they did that for the military, for military contracts. And someone asked him a question, or he was just talking about it, and he said, yeah, you know, when we were designing the suppressor, being quiet wasn't even one of the top three things that we were concerned about. And I was just dying laughing. Like it's called a suppressor, and he's basically saying that that's like not a major concern, which I think is just wild. But the military had other things that they were more concerned about, I guess rightfully so, but for a lot of civilians initial inclination is I want it to be as quiet as possible.
Yep. Hey man, I come from a world where people break hammers. Like they're just, just like rock, like real rock munchers.
Rock munchers.
And,
crayon munchers.
It needed to be, it needs to be like simple and robust. And I know I appreciate that, man. Some of the mounting systems, it can be challenging and very specific. I like super easy. I like not a lot of backblast and, preferably light. It's kind of my three go-tos, but
so what is back pressure? What is that? And what's bad about it?
Yeah. So back pressure is basically just like when you put a muffler on a car. I mean, I'm kind of talking to two separate audiences here. You create resistance in the barrel or in the pipe. And that resistance manifests itself in back pressure. Basically, when you pull the trigger in your gun, you have all these gases trying to leave the muzzle. And the suppressor is slowing those gases down, holding them back. And what that means is some of that gas comes back to you in the form of, you know, like a hot, sandy dust in your face.
Yeah.
Honey, I don't know how else to describe it.
It'll fog your glasses.
Yep. And depending on the gun, like if you have a short-barreled rifle, like 10 and a half inches with a really quiet suppressor, sometimes that can manifest in like eye-watering or tearing up because it's just so much gas. And that's, I think that... It's super quiet, but man, it's like, is it worth the pain? And I would say that there are things you can do, and some of those universal suppressors, worse or better. And it's almost easier to go with a dedicated suppressor to that caliber.
And that back pressure, you know, not only is it uncomfortable, but it also can cause problems with the gun, right?
Yeah. It usually manifests in like you have to tune your gun, and you hear people talking about gas blocks, adjustable gas blocks and buffer weights, spring rates, stuff like that.
Gotcha. Yeah. So just requires a little bit more work, but yeah, as Jared was saying, you know, if you want to be the quietest, you want your suppressor to be wide, you want it to be long. It's all about volume, really. That's the main part of that. But that downside is the back pressure. And most people honestly are probably best served with a middle of the road in all areas suppressor. They want something that's quiet, but not the quietest. You know, it's not too heavy, not too long, and not too much back pressure. Like that Goldilocks middle ground is really what's right for people. And a lot of people learn the hard way that by buying the big, long, wide suppressor, the high volume suppressor, and then having to spend a lot of money and time getting their gun tuned. Our gunsmiths do a decent amount of work to help people tune guns for their suppressor when they have something that's you know, causes problems. But I guess in their defense, it's not, there's really no way to know until you do it.
Yep. It helps having somebody on the other side who can kind of guide you through that.
Yeah.
For example, if I was going to put a suppressor on a bolt action, well, in that case, you know, maybe I can change because back pressure doesn't matter because the bolt doesn't move. So let's get the quietest and the lightest possible suppressor because I'm going to hunt with it.
Yeah.
In that scenario, like, yeah, man, get a huge can, make it out of titanium and, you know, have the quietest, easiest to hike setup.
Yeah.
But if you put that suppressor on a short barrel rifle, man, it's going to suck to shoot and it's going to get really hot and it could deform.
Absolutely. And that's, we kind of moved to rifle suppressors without saying that, but all of that's relevant to rifle suppressors, really not relevant to rimfire or pistol, the whole back pressure thing. Pistol, you got it far enough away from your face, you're not going to feel that. Typically don't have cycling issues with that either. And then rimfire ditto on both of those points. Another kind of point about rifle suppressors and universal suppressors, when you have something that's rated for a suppressor that's rated for rifle cartridges, so that's rifle pressure cartridges, so like 9 millimeter can be shot through a pistol or a rifle, but it's a pistol cartridge. 223 is a rifle cartridge. So when you have something like that, it's a lot higher pressure. They're necked cartridges typically. You are typically going to have suppressors that are sealed shut. So they're welded or just made. All the baffles are encased inside of the tube and you can't take the baffles out to clean them. That's kind of two-parter. They're all sealed together to be able to take all that pressure and that beating and at, you know, fast rates of fire. But the good thing is you don't actually really need to take them out to clean them because of all that pressure is blowing all the crap, the buildup, the crud out the end of the suppressor. And you don't really have it building up inside of it like you would with a handgun. Handguns are lower pressure. and you'll have carbon and lead build up inside of the suppressor. So you need to be able to take it apart and clean it. The good thing is you can, because it's lower pressure. They build them so that you can take the baffles and slide them out of the sleeve, break them apart and clean them. Same thing with rimfire. So you'll see like user serviceable as something that people talk about with suppressors. You really only see that and really only need that on rimfire and handgun suppressors. You don't need it, and you rarely ever see it on suppressors that are rated for rifle calibers, like rifle suppressors or universal suppressors.
Yeah. And like Mark was saying, you really don't need to worry about maintenance on centerfire rifle cans, because they burn up all their powder in the barrel. Usually they're a more efficient cartridge. As we're 9mm or 22, you're going to have unburnt powder. You're going to have carbon, and that stuff efficiently will fill up your suppressor eventually.
Yeah.
So with a rimfire can, we recommend a service cycle of like 300 rounds. You get to 300 rounds, man, take it apart, and clean it up.
300, get out of here.
Oh my God. This
is the king. Closer to like 2000. Yeah,
the king of no maintenance over here. Yeah. He just pawns it off on some poor employee to clean for him.
No. I just fill it up and then send it back to the manufacturer and say, why is this not working anymore?
Oh God.
It's really loud.
Don't do that.
Yeah.
Listen to Mark. But yeah, absolutely. There is a huge benefit to rimfire and handgun suppressors in that cleaning ability, because you actually get more performance so that suppressor's clean.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I guess since we're working at it from this side of things, a universal suppressor is essentially so typically rifle suppressors are a 223 or 224 caliber suppressor for, you know, 5.56 and 223, or it's a 30 caliber suppressor. So for 308, and then you can go down in caliber, so 223, 5.56, 300 blackout, anything in the middle. And then universal suppressors are typically, honestly, kind of like that same suppressor, but with a bigger hole. So they'll go up to like 36 caliber, which, so that'll do 9mm, and then anything smaller, so 223, 308, 7.62x39, you know, anything smaller, or it'll be 46 caliber. So it can do pretty much everything, 45 ACP, 40, 10mm, 9mm, but then 223, 5.56, 308, 300 blackout. That'll kind of do them all. The benefit when you step from those two suppressors down to a pistol suppressor or a rimfire suppressor is they're going to be lighter.
Oh, so that's much smaller.
Yeah, that's the biggest benefit.
And the same performance.
Yeah, or oftentimes better.
Yep.
So that's what you get when you go down really into those other lines. So if you're mostly going to suppress a 9mm handgun, you could get a 36 caliber, 9mm caliber universal suppressor and use that, but it's going to be heavier. It's going to be more expensive, quite a bit more expensive, probably a few $100 more. Plus you're going to have more money in attachments, a couple $100 more to get it running on that gun. So if you're mostly just going to shoot 9mm, the universal one just isn't that great of a fit.
Yep. It'll be shorter, lighter. The attachment method it'll come with the right piston for your gun.
You can take it apart.
Yep. Definitely recommend it. The jack of all trades suppressor is cool. Usually I see those go to the guy who's buying his first suppressor, or he has a couple different guns that he doesn't shoot very often and wants to have a suppressor option. But man, I really recommend people go with a dedicated suppressor to at least a type of gun. So like a rimfire gun, all your rimfire stuff, get a rimfire suppressor.
Yeah. We like highly discourage you shooting 22 through anything else just because it's so dirty.
So dirty. And then it also is so unnecessary. Putting a giant suppressor on a 22. First, if you're shooting 22, you're probably shooting it because it's fun, or you're shooting it with somebody, you know, like a little kid who doesn't have a lot of strength. And if you hang a pound of suppressor off the end of it, that really hurts the experience. Where like a normal 22 suppressor, it weighs like 6 ounces.
Yeah.
It's so light.
If you haven't, if you haven't seen it before, it's hard to visualize, but a 22 suppressor is the size of a roll of quarters.
Yep.
And a handgun suppressor is the size of a
paper towel roll.
Bratwurst?
That's the paper towel roll?
Holy cow.
Yeah, like a 45 suppressor.
Okay, maybe an empty paper towel roll. Just like the empty portion of it.
Oh, yeah, that paper towel roll, not the paper.
Yeah, or a bratwurst, I think, is another good one. Maybe a little bit bigger, bigger bratwurst. And then a rifle suppressor a little bit bigger and quite a bit heavier than that.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So, and then you go into handgun suppressors. And I usually say like 45 suppressors are going to be bigger than 9mm suppressors, no matter what. They're always larger, but you can usually get away with getting a 45 suppressor and using that on all of your handguns.
Yeah.
It's not ideal, but it's definitely better than trying to buy a universal suppressor and use it on handguns and everything.
Yeah.
And then universal rifle suppressors are really good if you, let's say you have a bolt action AR, a 45-70 lever action or something like that, then I can see having a universal suppressor just for those rifle calibers, at least in my perspective.
Yeah. And then when you get past this, there's all kinds of like niche suppressors. There's suppressors for AKs because the threading on AKs is notoriously bad. So they make suppressors that are meant to work for that. And the threadings are weird on those. And then the recoil system of an AK is kind of weird and you don't want to overpressure them even more than they already are. So there's niche suppressors for that. There's niche suppressors for the like sub guns, so to speak, the pistols or the SBRs that are little 9mm kind of rifles almost, you know, suppressors that are nice and short, made for those types of guns. So you'll run into other little specific suppressors for your situation if you have some unique things.
You know, we missed talked about this, Mark, but really all you need to mount a suppressor on your gun is a threaded barrel.
Yes.
So if you have a rifle that's not threaded, as long as it's got enough meat on the metal, you can give it to a gunsmith, like our gunsmith.
Yes.
And absolutely, he can cut it and get it threaded to like the standard pitch
for that caliber,
for your caliber. And then if you have a handgun, typically you can get a handgun barrel that's threaded from the factory or from an aftermarket distributor. That'll work awesome. No gunsmithing required.
Yeah. And they're sometimes 150 to 200, $300.
Yep. And then you're good to go.
The reason you can't thread those is because the threading needs to stick out past the end of the slide on a handgun. So if you threaded a barrel, it'd be inside the slide. Wouldn't do any good.
Yeah. And then that's really, I can't think of anything you need other than that to just get started and try it out. If you want to try out a suppressor, feel free to come to Blackwing. We have a couple different suppressed guns on our rental range that you can try out and experience. And we also have a new seminar starting up early November. Mark, why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so that's November 5th, and it's by a guy named Jed McLean. And so he works at Blackwing. He's been here for 7 years, for quite some time. And he is also a suppressor pro. We have a lot of those around. It's because it's become such a big part of our business. We found that niche early, and we are the largest suppressor dealer in Ohio, no doubt, and one of the largest in the United States. When the ATF came up with their electronic form system that they launched about a year ago from this episode, so that would be, it was like July of 2021. We were one of, it was like three or four retailers that they invited to beta test that website. Because of the large volume of forms that we do, they picked some of the biggest dealers and said, hey, we want to get your input. So we have a lot of people that know a lot about these things. And then because we have a lot of them, then a lot of our people know a lot about them. So it kind of works out well. But yeah, Jed knows a lot about them. He owns probably more suppressors than everyone else that works at Blackwing combined.
For sure.
Yeah. Which is a lot of suppressors. It seems like he's always buying them. I don't know what in the world he's putting them on, but
I think he's buying guns to fit suppressors now.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So he's going to teach a class called Discovering Suppressors, and it's going to be a 2-hour seminar. And it's really for people who don't have a suppressor and are thinking about one, or people that have a suppressor or two, but are interested in learning more about some of these other categories. And it's going to be a much more in-depth discussion over what we went on over today on the specifics of handgun, rifle, and pistol suppressors. He's going to talk a lot more about the mounting options, so how to get them on your gun. There's a lot more to that than we talked about, especially with rifle suppressors. The mounting stuff can be quite complicated. So we'll go over that. And then there's also going to be a demonstration on the range at the end where he'll show you kind of the difference between suppressed and unsuppressed across a few different calibers and subsonic versus standard velocity ammo or high velocity ammo, and let you see the difference there. So we've got that November 5th in 2022. And that's on a Saturday. I think that class is $35 and it's about 2 hours long. And then another neat event we have coming up is the Rugged MP5 Challenge, which is coming up at the end of October, October 29th, which is a Saturday as well.
Yep.
You've kind of been spearheading that, if you want to talk about that briefly.
Yeah, so this is a cool experience. What they do, what Rugged does, is they bring an MP5 and a bunch of 10-round magazines, and you register for the event, and at the end of the day, whoever has the tightest full auto run with the MP5.
One trigger pull.
Yeah, they get a free suppressor.
Yeah, kind of awesome.
They get hooked up.
And so, yeah, you sign up, $35. We'll have the sign up on our website, and you get a free t-shirt, get to shoot the gun. Hopefully you win a suppressor, and there'll be some good kind of promo deals, things going on that day for Rugged suppressors as well, in case you're interested in buying one.
And if you're listening to this after, like after October of 2022, we will always have stuff like this coming up. So yeah, feel free to check in with us and we'll be happy to help you out. But I think this is a good starting point.
Absolutely.
If you have questions about it, please don't hesitate to give us a call. We are happy to answer your questions. As Mark was saying, we sell a lot of suppressors, man. I would say definitely Jed and Mark more so than I, but like subject matter experts in this.
Yeah.
And yeah, we're happy to help.
Yeah. We're here to help you figure out what works for you. We don't some affinities to some brands more than others. Like Jared likes Surefire for some reason, even though they're really, really loud.
Surefire.
But you know, you have that, but we're here to help you, help guide you into what will work best for you. And then another huge, wonderful thing that we have is a solid gunsmithing department. So really not no matter what you buy, but most, pretty much all rifle suppressors are going to require a little bit of gunsmithing work, stuff that's not too complicated, but you need to do it right. You need $100-$150 worth of tools to, you know, mount a muzzle device on your gun properly using the right torque and the right
timing.
And yeah, all these things. And so our gunsmiths can kind of help out with that, or any issues you have, you start shooting a suppressor on your gun, it's not running right. That's what they're here for as well. So we kind of have that available for anything that you guys might need.
Sweet. And if you guys have any ideas or want to hear about a certain topic, please email them to us at Blackwing. We'd be excited to hear what you want to hear about.
Absolutely. And as Jared mentioned, call, stop in anytime, and we're happy to help you out with it.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.